Quảng Ngãi province. Đó là một cái tỉnh ở miền trung của Việt Nam,
which is a province in the center of Vietnam.
Và có ông Lê Văn Thơ, ủy viên thường trực của Hội đồng nhân dân tỉnh Hậu Giang.
Mr. Lê Văn Thơ, standing member of the People's Council of Hậu Giang province.
Và đây là một cái tỉnh mà nam của Việt Nam.
In the south of Vietnam.
Như vậy là đoàn trong chúng tôi thì còn có đi là có hai cấp, một là cấp đồng chí, cái hai là đại biểu quốc hội, và cái hai là đại biểu hội đồng dân cấp tỉnh của tứ bắc và trung của nam Việt Nam.
Well, our delegation is comprised of not only members of National Assembly but also representatives from different provinces of Vietnam. And other members from the Department of Finance, which is a supporting department for the committee.
Đoàn của chúng tôi đi du lịch này có mục đích là có muốn thắt chặt cái mối quan hệ giữa các cơ quan của Quốc hội Việt Nam với các cơ quan của Quốc hội Nam Phi.
One of the objectives of our delegation here today is to further deepen the bilateral ties between the communities in the National Assembly between the two countries.
Tìm hiểu về cái cơ cấu tổ chức cũng như cái điều hành, kinh nghiệm điều hành của Ủy ban Tài chính Ngân sách là một cái cơ quan tương ứng của Ủy ban Tài chính Ngân sách Việt Nam.
And to learn more about the organizational structure, the role and its tasks of the Standing Committee on Finance of South African Parliament.
Và cũng học tập kinh nghiệm về giám sát về tài chính và ngân sách của Quốc hội Nam Phi cũng như là của Ủy ban Tài chính của Nam Phi đối với lĩnh vực này.
To exchange experience on the overcoming role of the committee.
Và trong cái cuộc họp này chúng tôi đã làm việc với lại Bộ Tài chính của Nam Phi, và hôm nay thì được vinh dự là làm việc với lại Ủy ban Tài chính của
Well, in Pretoria, we had working sessions with the Ministry of Finance or National Treasury, and it's my honor to work with you all here today. Well, once again, I'd like to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and all members of the Standing Committee on Finance. Thank you.
Very welcome again. From my side, the lady sitting next to me, she just went out, all those in the class, Mr. Wolf, of the Standing Committee on Finance.
And
she will also be co-chairing the session of this morning.
Và đồng thời cũng là đồng chủ tọa với tôi ngày hôm nay trong buổi làm việc này.
And then we can go down the row on my left hand side, if you remember, please introduce yourself and your position.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Zukile Lienge. I'm a member of the Standing Committee of Finance in the National Assembly.
Tôi tên là Lưu Nguyên Kiệt, tôi là thành viên của Ủy ban Tài chính. Tôi là đại biểu của tỉnh Eastern Cape.
Good morning to our delegation. My name is Ted Van Royal. I'm the member of the Standing Committee on Finance, National Assembly.
Tên tôi là Phan Nguyen. Tôi cũng là thành viên của Ủy ban Tài chính.
Morning. My name is Aaron Nguyen, member of the Select Committee on Financial Appropriations.
then so we'll can you tell me which party are you representing from the National Cancer Province? International Cancer Province. Okay. Tôi là thành viên của tiểu ban tài chính và chính trị.
Good morning. My name is Patricia Adams, and I'm from the Northern Cape, one of the 9 provinces in our country. And I'm a member of the Standing Committee on Finance in the National Assembly.
Tên tôi là Patricia Adams. Tôi là thành viên của ủy ban tài chính tại Quốc hội. Tôi đến từ tỉnh Northern Cape, một trong 9 tỉnh của Nam Phi.
Good morning and welcome. My name is Susanne Chamin. I'm from the ANC party and in the Standing Committee of Finance at the National Assembly. Thank you.
Tên tôi là Bubadana Dlamini. Tôi là thành viên của đại diện của đảng ANC tại Ủy ban Tài chính. Xin chào một đoàn.
Good morning. I'm Nick Wernoff, also a member of the Standing Committee of Finance in the National Assembly. I reside in Cape Town, and I'm a member of COP.
Tên tôi là Nick Wernoff. Tôi là đại biểu từ đảng COP. Tôi hiện đang sinh sống tại Cape Town. Xin chào. I believe that's good morning or welcome.
Well done, well done, excellent.
Yeah.
My name is Arthur Lee. I'm from the province of choice in South Africa, known as KwaZulu-Natal, and I'm a member of the National Council of Provinces, and some of us refer to that as the Upper House, and a member of the Executive Committee of Finance and Appropriation.
Tên tôi là Lee. Tôi đến từ tỉnh KwaZulu-Natal. Tôi là thành viên của tiểu ban tài chính và chuẩn trị của quốc hội. Ở bên này thì có hai viện thượng viện và hạ viện, thì ông này là thành viên của thượng viện.
Good morning once again. My name is Zimisa Zawe. I'm with the International Relations Section of Parliament. I'm the one who's accompanying the
Tên tôi là Sibua đây. Tôi là nhân viên của phòng đối ngoại, của vụ đối ngoại. Tôi đến đây để giúp đỡ đoàn trong các buổi làm việc.
Good morning and welcome. I apologize for being late. My plane was delayed this morning. My name is Dion George. I'm a member of the Standing Committee on Finance.
Yeah.
I'm from Johannesburg, Gauteng, and I'm the Shadow Minister of Finance for the official opposition Democratic Alliance.
Xin chào mừng đoàn. Tôi xin lỗi là hôm nay tôi có đến máy bay của tôi từ Johannesburg thì đến muộn, và tôi là đại diện của đảng Liên minh Dân chủ DA. Tên tôi là George. Tôi là bộ trưởng bộ tài chính nhưng mà là trong bóng mờ nội các.
Seeing that it is Women's Month in South Africa, our honorable member will introduce.
Cái tháng này được gọi là cái tháng kỷ niệm ngày phụ nữ, nên tôi xin nhận lời lại cho bạn đây để giới thiệu. Tên tôi là Sibila. Tôi là đại diện của đảng ANC và là thành viên của tiểu ban tài chính.
Now our friends from Vietnam with the delegation is actually visiting us on a very important day today. This afternoon there's a joint sitting of the National Assembly and the NCP, National Council of Provinces, on the debate on Women's Month. So welcome again, and if you've got time to attend it this afternoon, it's 2 o'clock in the National Assembly.
Đoàn của chúng ta đến ngày hôm nay thì vào một cái thời điểm hết sức quan trọng, khi mà hội đồng địa phương và quốc hội thì có một cái buổi họp chung liên quan đến tháng vì quyền phụ nữ. Thì nếu như mà đoàn mình chưa có lịch thì làm việc hoặc là muốn đến dự thì 2 giờ chiều nay có thể cùng tham dự cái buổi họp đó.
Our distinguished honorable members from Vietnam, our committees is established, the finance committees in Parliament, National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces, in terms of the money bills, amendment procedures, and related matters kept?
Kính thưa các ngài, Ủy ban Tài chính của Quốc hội Nam Phi thì được thành lập dựa theo cái luật về tiền, money bill.
And in terms of the constitution of South Africa and in terms of the money bills act, we do our committee work.
Và luật này thì cũng được điều chỉnh bởi hiến pháp. Do vậy thì ủy ban được thành lập dựa theo cả hiến pháp lẫn cả đạo luật để hiện đại.
The act came into operation in April, if I'm correct, in 2009.
Cái đạo luật về tiền tệ mới, tức là money bill này, thì bắt đầu có hiệu lực từ tháng 4 năm 2009.
I'll give you a quick outline, very brief outline of what the act entails.
Tôi xin phép giới thiệu rất ngắn gọn các cái điều quy định về ủy ban tại luật tiền tệ mới này.
On January the 8th every year, the president, who is also the president of the ANC, delivers what we call the January 8th statement.
Vào mùng 8 tháng 1, chủ tịch nước, đồng thời cũng là chủ tịch của đảng ANC, sẽ có bài phát biểu đầu năm trước Quốc hội.
Then in February, the state of the president of the country delivers his state of the nation address.
Và ngày mùng và đầu tháng 2 thì chủ tịch nước cũng có một bài phát biểu tương tự, tổng thống cũng sẽ có một bài phát biểu tương tự tại Quốc hội.
And about a week after the state of the nation address, the Minister of Finance tabled the national budget in the National Assembly.
Và khoảng một tuần sau đó thì Bộ trưởng Bộ Tài chính sẽ phải trình ngân sách.
That entails a tabling the fiscal framework and revenue proposals.
Và như thế thì đây là bắt đầu cho cái khuôn khổ tài khoá cũng như là the fiscal framework and
revenue proposals.
Và cái trình về nguồn thu
for the present year and the next 2 years.
Cho năm tài khoá hiện tại và 2 năm sau.
As well as the division of revenue bill.
Cũng như là về the luật phân bổ ngân sách hoặc là phân bổ nguồn thu.
And the appropriations bill.
Và đạo luật chuẩn thi.
Just before the tabling of the budget, Treasury takes us through a workshop to make us again familiar with the proceedings of the budget process.
Trước khi trình cái đạo luật này thì Bộ Tài chính sẽ có một buổi làm việc với chúng tôi để có thể giới thiệu về cái quy trình ngân sách.
On the morning of the table, Minister tables the budget in the afternoon, 2 o'clock in the National Assembly. That morning we have what we call a lock-up session, where we sit with the documentation, the minister's tabling afternoon. Go into the room, they lock you up, and then you study.
Trong cái ngày mà vào buổi chiều lúc 2 giờ khi mà Bộ trưởng trình ngân sách ấy, thì buổi sáng đó thì chúng tôi sẽ có buổi học kín, phiên học đóng cửa, không cho bên ngoài biết được, để nghiên cứu về cái dự luật này.
The day after the tabling, we again have a session with National Treasury where they take us through the whole budget, the briefing process.
Ngày hôm sau, sau khi cái dự luật này được trình, thì Bộ Tài chính có nhiệm vụ là giải thích về cái đạo luật, cái dự luật trên, cái dự luật ngân sách trên.
Now the appropriation bill and the division of revenue bill are fixed. Provinces. We've got 9 provinces. We've got 9 provincial legislatures.
Tại Nam Phi thì chúng tôi có 9 tỉnh và 9 hội đồng địa phương. Do vậy thì cái ngày hôm đó thì chúng tôi cũng phải làm việc luôn về cái đạo luật phân chia phân bổ ngân sách cho địa phương.
So in terms of the Money Bills Act, the Standing Committee for Finance and the Select Committee for Finance do their work
Liên quan đến cái đạo luật chính trị thì hai ủy ban, một là ủy ban tài chính và hai là cũng là ủy ban tài chính nhưng tại cấp tỉnh, thì cũng phải ngồi lại với nhau để xây dựng cái đạo luật này.
So jointly when we deal with the fiscal framework, the revenue proposals, the duration of revenue and the as far as possible we do our work jointly. And when we get the briefing, provinces are invited to form part of the briefing.
Như vậy thì hai ủy ban này cùng làm với nhau về các cái vấn đề liên quan đến ngân sách, liên quan đến nguồn thu, liên quan đến chuẩn bị và khuôn khổ tài khoá. Sau đó thì hai ủy ban cũng phải ngồi lại với nhau để thông báo lại với cả Bộ Tài chính những cái kết quả làm việc.
When we say we invite provinces, we invite the chairpersons of the portfolio committees on finance.
At provincial level. Khi chúng tôi giải thích rằng là chúng tôi mời các tỉnh đến để nghe báo cáo, thì ở đây là đại diện của các tỉnh chính là giám đốc sở tài chính đến để nghe.
The standing committee on finance and the select committee on finance then have 16 days to deal with the fiscal framework and the revenue proposal.
Sau đó thì hai ủy ban về tài chính và chuẩn chi tại cấp trung ương và cấp địa phương thì có 16 ngày để có thể nghiên cứu về khuôn khổ tài khoá cũng như về luật thu ngân sách.
And they come up with their report and table it in the house. And the Minister of Finance also gets the opportunity to react to the report.
Sau đó thì cần phải đưa ra được báo cáo trình lên Quốc hội. Trong quá trình báo cáo này thì cũng Bộ trưởng Bộ Tài chính cũng được phép ngồi và giải thích cũng như là xem xét các cái ý kiến được đưa ra trong báo cáo.
Throughout the whole process, and I'll come to the rest of the process throughout the year. A very important element is public participation.
trong toàn bộ quá trình này thì một yếu tố quan trọng không thể thiếu được đó là sự tham gia của công chúng.
Public participation in the sense of public hearings that we conduct in Parliament.
Trong đó có cái việc điều trần tại Quốc hội công khai.
And then when it comes to the division of revenue and appropriations, we also conduct public hearings in provinces.
Và liên quan đến hai đạo luật là đạo luật phân bổ nguồn thu và đạo luật chuẩn chi, thì hai vấn đề này thì cũng được điều trần tại các tỉnh một cách công khai.
The division of revenue bill is usually passed in the National Council of Provinces March, April.
Vào khoảng tháng 3 hoặc tháng 4 thì cái đạo luật phân bổ nguồn thu được thông qua tại các tỉnh.
But there's a six-week cycle in the National Council of Provinces dealing with this type of legislation.
Và ở cấp tỉnh thì hội đồng địa phương có 6 tuần để có thể thông qua hoặc là xử lý vấn đề này.
The next important event in this budget process is when we deal with the annual reports of departments. We call it the DRRR process. In actual fact, we deal with the annual report to look at the spending trends in terms of their performance plans that they table at the beginning of the year, of each year.
Một cái mốc quan trọng khác trong quy trình ngân sách là việc xem xét báo cáo hàng năm, báo cáo tình hình thực hiện hàng năm của các bộ ngành. Báo cáo này thì cần phải chỉ ra rõ được cái xu hướng chi tiêu so với cả cái mục đích đã được quy định đầu năm đối với các báo cáo này.
And the Standing Committee on Finance will come up with a report that will be tabled in the House, in the National Assembly.
Sau đó thì ủy ban tài chính sẽ phải đưa ra được một báo cáo sau khi tổng hợp các cái báo cáo hàng năm của các bộ để chỉnh lên Quốc hội. Liên quan đến các cái kết quả làm việc và các cái khuyến nghị đưa ra.
That takes us up to September.
Như thế thì tiến trình này đã được kết là vào tháng 9.
Then in October, the Minister of Finance tabled what we call the medium term budget policy statement, the MTBS.
Vào tháng 10, Bộ trưởng Bộ Tài chính lúc này sẽ phải trình cái chính sách ngân sách trung hạn. Báo cáo chính sách ngân sách trung hạn.
And the Standing Committee on Finance have 30 days to report on that.
Và Ủy ban Tài chính lúc này có 30 ngày sau khi báo cáo này được đưa ra thì phải nghiên cứu.
The Standing Committee on Finance and the Select Committee on Finance deal with the appropriation with the MTBS jointly.
Lúc này thì Ủy ban Tài chính cũng như là Ủy ban Tài chính và chủ trì ở hai cấp là cấp trung ương và cấp địa phương thì cùng làm việc với nhau và cùng đưa ra các quyết nghị và báo cáo.
The medium term budget policy statement actually set the tone for the national budget that will be tabled in February.
Can you say that again? In February?
The medium term budget policy statement in October sets the tone for the tabling of the national budget in February.
Chính cái báo cáo về khuôn khổ ngân sách trung hạn này thì định hướng cho đưa ra được những cái định hướng lớn định hướng chính cho ngân sách của năm sau.
Again, public participation is very important when we call public hearings on the medium term budget policy.
Trong quá trình này thì vai trò của các cái buổi điều trần trước Quốc hội cũng là hết sức quan trọng.
Although provinces don't deal with the medium term budget policy statement per se in the province, we invite them part of the process in Parliament.
Cho dù là ở trong đến quá trình này thì vai trò của cấp tỉnh là không còn quan trọng nữa. Tuy nhiên chúng tôi vẫn mời đại diện của các tỉnh đến để có thể cùng tham dự cho cái buổi điều trần này.
This is our work in Parliament, but our work must also proceed outside what we call oversight.
Đó là cái vai trò chính, những cái thủ tục công việc chính tại Quốc hội. Tuy nhiên thì công việc không chỉ được thực hiện tại Quốc hội mà Quốc hội còn có một cái vai trò lớn hơn nữa, đấy là vai trò giám sát, oversight
calling departments to Parliament and view the spending trends, but also oversight going outside Parliament to say visit the Reserve Bank, the Land Bank, etc. SARS, the South African Revenue Service. Just to mention a few examples.
Cái vai trò giám sát không chỉ giới hạn ở việc là mời các bộ ngành lên để giải thích về các cái báo cáo tình hình thực hiện của họ, mà còn có cả các cái chuyến đi khảo sát thực tế các bộ ngành khác, ví dụ như là đến làm việc với cả Ngân hàng Trung ương, làm việc với Sở Thuế, ở Tổng cục Thuế, vân vân.
Section 15 of the Moneyball Act deals with the establishment of a budget office, a monetary budget office.
16. Section 15. 6 and 16. Tức là điều 6 và điều 15 tại đạo luật mà đã được đưa cho các bạn thì có quy định về điều này.
We are now in that process. Budget office haven't been established yet. We did a study tour to different countries.
Thực chất thì Ủy ban Tài chính chúng tôi cũng có thực hiện những chuyến thăm và khảo sát tại các quốc gia khác nữa để tham khảo về cái quy trình làm ngân sách. Chúng tôi vẫn thực sự chưa hoàn thiện về vấn đề này.
So I tried my best to give you a quick briefing on the Moneyball Act. Ask the secretary to give me a copy of this.
Tôi vừa mới trình bày phản bác qua những cái nét chính của cái điều luật Money Bill. Và tôi đã có đề nghị thư ký của tôi là đưa các bạn vào copy.
Are there any questions or clarities you want to touch on?
Dạ, không biết các ngài thì có câu hỏi gì hoặc là có vấn đề gì cần làm rõ không?
Tôi xin hỏi ông bà một câu hỏi.
I would like to have some questions, please.
Trong cái lịch trình làm việc giữa chính phủ, đặc biệt là Bộ Tài chính với Ủy ban Tài chính Ngân sách, thì trong đạo luật quốc tế thì có một buổi làm việc với lại Ủy ban.
In the Money Bill's amendment procedure, okay, there's a clause or any stipulation that says that there will be, as you mentioned before, there's a session, working session between the Finance Committee and the Ministry of Finance or National Treasury.
Trong đạo luật có quy định, còn biết ngoài cái buổi đó ra rồi thì Ủy ban Tài chính có tổ chức những cái phiên mà cho Bộ trưởng Bộ Tài chính được điều trần trước Ủy ban về những vấn đề mà Ủy ban quan tâm hay không?
Well, beside that, the specific working session that you mentioned, is there any other sessions that the committee can invite the minister in and have explanation on some other, or clarification on some other clauses or on their working committees?
Well, câu hỏi thứ hai là trong cái quá trình thảo luận của ủy ban ấy, thì tôi biết rằng chắc chắn sẽ có những ý kiến khác nhau. Vậy thì có quy định nào là ủy ban phải biểu quyết những vấn đề mà có ý kiến khác nhau và phải chấp hành tối đa số không?
Well, my second question is during the working process at the Finance Committee, there is short or there are short speech or debates. Okay, is there any regulation or stipulation in the law saying that within the committee there must be a vote or something?
Và những ý kiến về thiểu số thì có được báo cáo lại cho cô hay không, hay là chỉ báo cáo theo ý kiến của đa số?
And the conclusion is that well, the report coming out of those working sessions by the Finance Committee, will it reflect the majority, the will of majority, or also the minor, since unmentioned voting process before?
Thì trong quy định của đạo luật của Việt Nam chúng tôi ấy, thì kể cả ý kiến đa số hay ý kiến thiểu số, thậm chí một ý kiến cũng phải được báo cáo ra quốc hội.
Because
đó là ý kiến của thành viên của ủy ban.
Because in Vietnam's National Assembly, we have to report everyone's opinion, even though it's just one vote by one vote, or it's regardless whether it's one vote or it's majority's vote. Thank you. There will be more questions coming from other delegates.
Although members, I'm not going to do the lecturing from the table.
Tôi xin phép là không nên đọc thoại và những lời cho các thành viên trong ủy ban.
I want you to respond also to the question. All those speakers, our work of the committee, the engagement with National Treasury, the Minister of Finance throughout the year, the whole question of voting.
Tôi muốn các ngài ở đây có thể giới thiệu thêm và trình bày thêm về cái quy trình làm việc với bộ ngành, đặc biệt là Bộ Tài chính, bên cạnh đó là được bỏ phiếu trong ủy ban.
And the view of my words,
yes,
political parties represented in the committee, how is it structured and passed on in the House?
cũng như là ý kiến của các đại biểu đại diện cho các đảng phái khác nhau tại ủy ban, làm thế nào để các ý kiến này được phản ánh tại quốc hội.
Thank you, Honorable George. Dr. George.
Xin mời ngài George.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to respond on the question regarding inputs from the minority parties. We do discuss the fiscal framework and the revenue proposals in the committee.
Tôi xin trình bày đầu tiên là về những cái ý kiến của những ý kiến thiểu số trong ủy ban. Trong ủy ban thì chúng tôi có thảo luận cùng nhau các cái vấn đề mà liên quan đến quy trình ngân sách.
My experience is that the views of the minority are included in the reporting process. At the end of the process, obviously the majority view will prevail if we do not agree, for example, on the proposals and the fiscal framework.
Okay. Theo cái quan điểm cá nhân của tôi thì những cái ý kiến thiểu số vẫn được đưa vào trong báo cáo tại cuối các phiên họp. Tuy nhiên thì thường các ý kiến đa số này thì nó sẽ thể hiện rõ hơn.
We also do have the opportunity to discuss this in Parliament, the report. We discuss it subsequently in Parliament, where the minorities also have the opportunity to indicate their views. For example, this year, my party.
Okay. Và như thế thì cho sau khi trình ra quốc hội thì tôi thấy rằng là ngay cả những cái đảng phái nhỏ cũng như là ý kiến thiểu số có quyền được trình bày cái quan điểm riêng của cá nhân đại biểu cũng như là quan điểm của đảng. Tôi có thể đưa ra một ví dụ.
For example, this year my party did not support the revenue proposals and the fiscal framework for reasons which we set out very clearly. But the debate is robust and democracy is very much alive. Thank you, Chief.
And you are from the tức là ví dụ cụ thể của tôi là năm nay thì đảng Liên minh Dân chủ không đưa ra các cái báo cáo hoặc là tổng kết liên quan đến quy trình ngân sách. Tuy nhiên thì những cái cuộc thảo luận tại ủy ban thì vẫn diễn ra rất sôi nổi và những cái ý kiến của đảng Liên minh Dân chủ vẫn được thể hiện trong cái báo cáo trình ra tại quốc hội.
Thank you, Chair President. I will respond to the question that leads to the powers of the Standing Committee in relation to the Minister.
Tôi xin được phép nói thêm về quan hệ giữa Ủy ban Tài chính với Bộ Tài chính.
The Standing Committee has an extension of Parliament. We are shocked for this on this period on silent or switch it off. Yeah, the Standing Committee as an extension of Parliament has all the powers that are vested in Parliament.
Ủy ban Tài chính với tư cách là một ủy ban giám sát của Quốc hội thì có mọi quyền đầy đủ đối với cả Bộ Tài chính.
Individual members of Parliament and of the Standing Committee have a right to pose questions orally or in writing to the Minister.
Các thành viên của ủy ban thì có quyền chất vấn miệng cũng như là gửi câu hỏi dưới dạng văn bản đến cho Bộ trưởng.
Therefore, this
as and when it requires such an explanation for a particular notion that they want, that we want explanation of. We have a right to summon the minister to come and explain before us.
Như vậy thì trước một vấn đề nào đó thì bất kỳ một thành viên nào của ủy ban cũng có quyền mời bộ trưởng đến để điều trần về vấn đề liên quan.
Thank you.
The provisions that is there to accommodate participating political parties, including the minority parties.
Tôi xin nói thêm một chút về cái ý kiến thiểu số ở trong ủy ban.
Over and above the provision cited by Honorable George, parties are allowed to call for, provided for by the rules of parliament. Parties are allowed to call for a division of the house.
Tức là ngoài cái việc ngoài nhiệm vụ giám sát là nhiệm vụ chính của ủy ban thì các đại biểu quốc hội dựa theo luật đại biểu quốc hội thì cũng được quyền mời các bộ trưởng.
Or to request that their opposition to a certain position be noted.
Hoặc là có những cái ý kiến phản đối cụ thể gửi lên.
And obviously the House Chair, the Speaker will then allow, I mean, the members of Parliament, I mean, to vote for the said position.
Sau đó thì Chủ tịch Quốc hội sẽ yêu cầu các đại biểu quốc hội bỏ phiếu về các cái vấn đề hoặc về tranh cãi. Không biết là
can I just say in South Africa we are blessed to have a very good minister of finance.
cho phép tôi được nói một cái ý kiến khác, tức là chúng tôi rất may mắn có được một bộ trưởng tài chính có năng lực.
And the mood in the Standing Committee of Finance is because of that very good, and the majority of our decisions are consensus, taken by consensus.
Và như thế thì là ủy ban tài chính của chúng tôi làm việc cũng dễ dàng hơn, và thường thì chúng tôi đạt được đồng thuận về các cái vấn đề chính.
Yes, it's a multi-party committee, but we take our, both of our decisions are taken on consensus.
Tôi muốn nhấn mạnh rằng là ủy ban có đại diện của tất cả các đảng ở đây. Thế tuy nhiên ý, thì hầu hết các vấn đề thảo luận tại ủy ban thì đều đạt được đồng thuận.
Because at the end of the day, we work with the people's money, and we are accountable to.
Tôi phải nói là như thế này, chúng tôi làm việc ở đây là vì dân, chúng tôi đang làm việc với cả cái túi tiền của người dân, nên chúng tôi sẽ chịu trách nhiệm về điều đó.
I just want to put more clarity on the earlier presentation of the chapter in relation to the January 8th statement.
Tôi muốn nói thêm những cái điều mà ngài chủ tọa đã nói về cái bài phát biểu của tổng thống vào ngày 8 tháng 1.
As the chapter has alluded to the president of the country, the president of the ruling party, the ANC.
Tại Nam Phi thì chủ tịch của đảng ANC, đảng dân tộc Free, là đảng cầm quyền thì đồng thời cũng là tổng thống.
Yeah, the 8th of January is the date in which the ANC was officially established and launched.
Ngày 1 tháng 8 là ngày mà center equivalent, ANC.
So the statement that is made by the president, he is making that statement on behalf of the ANC. In fact, it is a guiding statement for government by the ruling party outside of parliament.
Như thế, cái bài phát biểu của chủ tịch đảng ANC vào ngày 8 tháng 1 cũng là cái chỉ đạo định hướng của đảng ANC đối với chính phủ trong năm mà chưa phải là phát biểu tại quốc hội.
So the activities of government is measured in a particular financial year as against that January 8 statement.
Như thế thì là cái hoạt động liên quan đến tài chính của chính phủ trong năm thì cũng phải dựa trên cái bài phát biểu định hướng này của ANC và của Tổng thống vào ngày 8 tháng 1.
The debate in Parliament, the debate is on the state of the nation at this.
Yeah, in February.
Yeah.
Tức là sau đó thì vào tháng 2 thì Tổng thống lại có một cái bài phát biểu như vậy nữa và tại Quốc hội. Thế và lúc này thì cái thảo luận tại Quốc hội được bắt đầu và bắt đầu sôi nổi và tính từ thời điểm này thì quy trình tại Quốc hội được bắt đầu.
The January 8 statement is a political statement by the president of ANC. It's the same person that the president of South Africa comes and addresses the nation in Parliament. That statement of the nation addresses them the best.
Tôi muốn nói thêm là đấy là cái đặc thù về chính trị của Nam Phi, tức là chủ tịch của đảng cầm quyền thì là được bầu lên thì là tổng thống. Do vậy thì cái bài phát biểu mà mùng 8 tháng 1 thì là mang tính chất chính trị, tuy nhiên thì chỉ là bài chính trị nhưng lại có định hướng lớn đối với cả cái quy trình ngân sách trong Quốc hội về sau này.
I noted on the communion after that of St. George, then we'll have to wrap up the conversation taking place.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is a question, Chair. I would like to ask the delegation. Looking at the U.S. Federal Reserve and the Europe Central Bank, you look at their behavior. The Europe Central Bank trying to manipulate the bond market to try and resuscitate the financial environment that they're in now, while the U.S. Federal Reserve is focusing, is still believing that if they focus on the bulk infrastructure, they will try to resuscitate. Now the question is, that impact. How does the delegation, how do you perceive that? And what do you think should be the right way, in fact, that has been followed by the U.S. Federal Reserve and together with the Europe Central Bank?
Thực chất thì tôi có một câu hỏi về tình hình tài chính toàn cầu hiện nay liên quan đến Ngân hàng Trung ương Hoa Kỳ cũng như là Ngân hàng Trung ương châu Âu. Chính phủ các nước châu Âu cũng như là chính phủ Liên bang Hoa Kỳ thì thông qua ngân hàng này muốn ổn định tình hình tài chính. Tôi mong các ngài có thể cho tôi một cái ý kiến liệu rằng là cái hoạt động cũng như là các cái chính sách đưa ra bởi Ngân hàng Trung ương châu Âu và Ngân hàng Trung ương Mỹ thì hiện nay là đúng đắn không? Và có cái định luật cụ thể gì hơn không ạ?
Tôi thấy câu hỏi của bà rất là thú vị.
An interesting question, I must say.
Việt Nam của chúng tôi cũng như là Nam Phi, chúng ta đã tham gia WTO và phải nói là hội nhập kinh tế toàn cầu. Cho nên là tất cả những hoạt động của các nền tài chính lớn trên thế giới, như là của Mỹ, của EU hay là của Nhật thì đều có tác động trên này.
Well, as you know, Vietnam and South Africa are both members at the WTO, and the situation in the world at the moment, the deepening global integration, any move by the U.S. Federal Reserve, European Central Bank, or Japanese Central Bank will have an effect or an impact on us.
Và tôi cũng thấy rằng là có thể nói rằng là cái tài chính của Mỹ và những chính sách tiền tệ của Fed đưa ra vừa qua đấy cũng có một tác động rất lớn đến nền tài chính của toàn cầu.
And we see that the financial policy, especially the recent one set by U.S. Federal Reserve, making a way for work.
Và những chính sách tiền tệ mà của Fed đưa ra như vậy đấy, thì chúng tôi thấy rằng là thứ nhất là nó sẽ cứu cho cái nền kinh tế của Mỹ, đặc biệt là cái tình hình sản xuất kinh doanh của Mỹ cũng đang gặp những cái khó khăn nhất định, cũng như là những vấn đề thuộc về lao động.
And for sure, those monetary policy made by the U.S. Federal Reserve set the financial situation in the U.S., especially the manufacturing sector.
Và cái điều chúng ta cũng đều thấy rằng vừa qua thì là cái trần của Mỹ đã là 164 để mà dỡ bỏ cái trần nợ công và để mà tránh một cái cuộc đổ vỡ vỡ nợ về mặt kỹ thuật của
And the U.S. Congress, for the 64th time, has removed the debt, the public debt ceiling, to avoid the technical collapse of the U.S. financial market situation.
Và nếu mà cái chính sách tài chính tiền tệ của Mỹ mà có thay đổi mà đẩy cái nền kinh tế Mỹ có những bước ổn định của phục hồi thì nó sẽ có tác động rất tốt đối với các nền kinh tế khác.
And I hope that with its sound policy, the U.S. Will improve the situation not only in the U.S. but in the world in general, especially in both our countries.
Tuy nhiên một cái điều chúng tôi cũng đang suy nghĩ tới đó là cái việc chính phủ Mỹ cũng đã thả nổi cái đồng đô la.
However, what concerns me the most is the exchange rate of the U.S. dollar. It is floating now.
Và khi cái đồng đô la nó mất giá thì có thể nói là đây là một cú đánh thuế toàn cầu, nhất là những đối với quốc gia mà sử dụng và phụ thuộc nhiều vào đồng đô la.
Yeah, well, as you know, with the depreciation of the greenback or the U.S. dollar, this is a loss for all of us.
Tôi lấy một ví dụ đơn cử như là hiện nay là đối với lại Trung Quốc là một cái nước mà đang cái dự trữ ngoại tệ lớn nhất.
One example is the Chinese foreign reserve.
Và trong đó cũng có nắm một lượng trái phiếu rất lớn của chính phủ Mỹ.
Who hold a large amount of U.S. bond.
Và chính việc mà đồng đô la mất giá và cũng là cái nợ công và những cái tình hình tài chính của Mỹ nó bất ổn thì cũng đặt cho chính phủ Trung Quốc đứng trước những khó khăn rất lớn.
With the depreciation of the U.S. dollar, with the instability of the U.S. financial markets, those situations have put the Chinese Federal Reserve or Chinese Central Bank on the spot, facing difficulties.
Đó là những điều tôi muốn nói là những kể cả những mặt tích cực của cái nền tài chính tiền tệ của Mỹ và cũng là những mặt hạn chế của nó mà tác động đến kinh tế toàn cầu.
In to sum up, those are two sides of the point. and the U.S. Financial and monetary policy have both positive effect and negative effect on all of us. Especially on those who are not, who don't have yet a strong economy yet.
Cho nên rất nhiều nước đang muốn thoát ra khỏi cái sự phụ thuộc vào đồng đô la.
Therefore, many of us here want to get out on the dependence on the use of U.S. dollar.
Và hiện nay cho nên chính vì thế mà cái tình trạng dự trữ vàng và làm cho cái giá vàng của thế giới đẩy lên cũng là một cái hiện tượng để người ta mà đang có sự
One of the indications, clear indication is that the price of gold and the accumulation of gold in some of the countries have gone up. The gold price has gone up dramatically, reflects the bad expectation for the world economy. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for that reply. Unfortunately, our time is
rất là xin lỗi khi ngài và cả đoàn thì thời gian làm việc của chúng ta đã hết. Tôi rất phải xin lỗi bởi vì là đoàn bởi vì là ủy ban đã có một cái cuộc họp ngay sau đây. Tôi nghĩ rằng là đoàn sẽ có buổi làm việc với cả ủy ban tài chính và trưởng chi ngày hôm sau.
I wish we could carry on for the whole day.
Tôi cũng mong rằng là chúng ta có thể làm việc được cả ngày. Tuy nhiên thì để có thể chia sẻ được những kinh nghiệm và học hỏi lẫn nhau. Cái việc ngồi lại với nhau hôm nay thì không chỉ làm thắt chặt hơn quan hệ giữa hai nước, mà chính là hai ủy ban có thể tìm hiểu được tốt hơn công việc của nhau.
Bây giờ xin thay mặt đoàn xin cảm ơn ông chủ tọa và các
thành viên. I would like to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and all members of the committee.
Có thể ghi nhận cái chuyến này chúng tôi có một cái kỷ niệm nhỏ để gửi đến ông chủ tọa và bà chủ tọa của cái phiên làm việc hôm nay.
I would like to present you, Mr. Chairman and Co-Chairman, a small gift as a token of appreciation to remember the working session here today.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody, members, and in terms of the rules of the NA, in the absence of the chairperson, the committee would need to elect a stand-in chairperson or an acting chairperson. So may I ask for any nominations for that? Dr. Lingen?
I nominate the name of Honorable Sibiza.
Okay, so that's Honorable Sibila, Dr. Lienge, and Dr. George Condit. Okay.
In the bill, and this is one of the most important aspects that will be implemented.
So it's intended that the spouses can then sort of have a clean break between each other, and the pension interest can be sorted out quite quickly, and then the parties can sort of have a move forward in the financial terms relating to their pension benefits. Now, just to give a brief background about the implementation of the Clean Break Principle, the Pension Funds Amendment Act of 2007 incorporated the Clean Break Principle into the Pension Funds Act of 1956 as a new section 37D, in particularly in subsection 1, 3, 4, and 5 of section 37D. And this resulted in there being a differentiation between pension funds that are regulated in terms of the Pension Funds Act and the GEPF. And it has been recognized that this differentiation needs to be addressed, and this was particularly highlighted by a recent court case that has been brought by Ms. Matilda Visa in the Western Cape High Court. And this has really necessitated the urgent need to complete the amendments to the GEP, Government Employees Pension Law, to allow for the implementation of the Clean Break Principle. And recently, at the beginning of July, the High Court found that the differentiation was in fact unconstitutional, and it suspended that constitutional suspended the implementation of a reading in that is provided in terms of its court order for a period of 12 months to allow for appropriate amendments to be made to the Government Employees Pension Law. And so the amendments contained in the bill will certainly squarely address the implementation of the Clean Break Principle in a manner that is appropriate for the Government Employees Pension Law, the Government Employees Pension Fund. And in particular, Clause 3 of the bill provides for the insertion of a new Section 24A into the Government Employees Pension Law that will provide for the implementation of the Clean Break Principle. And it provides how it will, in general, how it will operate in relation to the Government Employees Pension Law. And there will also be necessary significant rule amendments that will need to be made to the Government Employees Pension Rules, and those will be discussed in more detail in the presentation shortly by Jolene. And so the new Section 24A that will be incorporated into the Government Employees Pension Law will bring the Government Employees Pension Law in line with what is currently provided for in the Pension Funds Act, and it will address the differentiation that currently exists between the GEPF and those pension funds that are regulated in terms of the Pension Funds Act. Now, the other major aspect that is addressed by the bill is the implementation of the revised non-statutory forces pension dispensation. And in April 2009 and November 2010, Cabinet approved the revision of the NSF pension dispensation by abolishing the need for former non-statutory forces members to contribute to the full funding of the recognition of their non-statutory forces service by the GEPF. Currently, the non-statutory forces members were having to make, I think it's a 5% contribution towards the recognition of their NSF service. So those members will now no longer have to make that 5% contribution. And then the full period of NSF service will be recognized for all former non-statutory forces members who entered into an employment contract with all government departments and institutions that contribute to the Government Employees Pension Fund. And will be provided that special pension benefits will be paid to qualifying members who are still in service. They will be able to continue to receive those benefits until they actually exit the Government Employees Pension Fund. And at that time, they would then be entitled to receive the pension benefits that they would be eligible to receive in accordance with the Government Employees Pension Fund rules. Currently, it is provided that
when a member had their non-statutory force of service recognized, at that point they would become no longer eligible to receive any special pension benefits. So now they will be able to continue to receive those special pension benefits until they in fact exit the government employees pension fund. So an amendment to Section 30A, subsection 2 of the Government Employees Pension Law, and a consequential amendment to Section 14, subsection 4 of the Special Pensions Act will enable full effect to be given to the revised NSF pension dispensation as has been approved by Cabinet. So Section 30A, subsection 2 will be amended to provide that a person who has their non-statutory force of service recognized as pensionable service by the government employees pension fund will not have any benefits that they may have received in terms of the Special Pensions Act deducted from the benefits to which they are entitled to receive from the government employees pension fund. So currently, the situation was that any special pension benefits that they may have been received would have to either be paid back by the member or deducted from the benefits that they would be eligible to receive in terms of the government employees pension fund.
Just a point of information, what is NSF service? Can you just give me a definition of that?
NSF service is non-statutory forces service, and it's particular, I'll just read the definition in the Special Pension Act. In the Government Employees Pension Law, it refers to former members of a non-statutory force service. And these are particular specified organizations that it was recognized that those people who had been members of those organizations should be eligible to receive particular service. So this would be former members of Umkhonto we Sizwe or the Azanian People's Liberation Army, particularly covers those particular organizations. And there's a definition in the Government Employees Pension Law of former member of a non-statutory force of service that sets out clearly who is covered in that group. So it will also be in the bill. As a result of the bill, it will also be explicitly provided in Section 30A, subsection 2 of the Government Employees Pension Law, and Section 14, subsection 4 of the Special Pensions Act, in terms of the consequential amendment that is contained in the schedule to the bill, that a person's entitlement to receive a benefit in terms of the Special Pensions Act would only terminate when they exit the GEPF. So, looking at the objects of the bill, the bill has a few very clearly specified objects. So, it provides for the amendment of a definition of employer and the insertion of a new definition of pension interest. And it is intended to provide for the payment of a pension interest to a former spouse of a member on divorce or the dissolution of a customary marriage. So that relates to the implementation of the clean break principle, and it provides for amendment of the powers of the board to make rules to allow for the appropriate implementation of the clean break principle, and to amend the provisions providing for the recognition of pensionable service of former members of non-statutory forces or services. So that's to enable the full implementation of the revised non-statutory forces pension dispensation. So the bill contains 8 clauses, and clause 1 provides for the amendment of section 1 of the Government Employees Pension Law to amend the definition of employer slightly to align it appropriately with some amendments which were made to the Public Service Act, so that the individuals who are covered by the GEPL, Government Employees Pension Law, is appropriately aligned with the Public Service Act. And that's very important because then it ensures that all employees of government departments and government components in terms of the Public Service Act will be covered in terms of the amendments that are to be made in the to the Government Employees Pension Law. And we also have inserted, we'll also insert a definition of pension interest, which I have, which is reproduced in the presentation. And this definition is very important because in relation to the Government Employees Pension Fund, for the implementation of the Clean Break Principle, it's important to have a clear definition of how a member's interest in the fund is defined, and then how it will then be determined from that interest that the member has in the fund, what the former spouse of a member would be entitled to in terms of the Government Employees Pension Law and the rule. Because the nature of the fund as a defined benefit fund subject to particular rules means that in order to appropriately implement the Clean Break Principle, it's essential that the nature of the member's interest in the fund is correctly defined, so that then the interest due to the former spouse can be appropriately determined, and that interest can then be appropriately allocated to the to the former spouse, and the member's remaining interest can also be appropriately determined. Clause 2 of the bill provides for an amendment of Section 21 of the Government Employees Pension Law to enable a slight extension of the potential for the assignment or transfer of benefits. And this is achieved by making Section 21 subject to the provisions of the proposed new Section 24A that is included in Clause 3 of the bill. So together, Section 21, as it will be amended, and the new Section 24A that will be inserted in into the Government Employees Pension Law by this bill, will effectively provide, effectively enable the implementation of the Clean Break Principle upon divorce or the dissolution of a customary marriage. And Clause 4 of the bill provides for the amendment of Section 29 to G of the Government Employees Pension Law to enable the board to make rules to provide for the appropriate implementation of the Clean Break Principle by the GEPF. And Clause 6 provides for the amendment of Section 38, subsection 2, to enable the implementation of the revised non-statutory forces pension dispensation. Clause 6 is a transitional provision, and Clause 7 and the schedule of the bill provide for the consequential amendment of Section 14, subsection 4 of the Special Pensions Act, which is necessary to enable the implementation of the revised non-statutory forces pension dispensation that was approved by Cabinet. And then finally, Clause 8 of the bill is the short title on the commitment. Just to briefly touch on the financial implications, the implementation of the Clean Break Principle is not anticipated to have financial implications for government, as it is thought to be implemented in a revenue-neutral manner for the GEPF. And there will be financial implications for government relating to the special pension benefits, and it has been estimated that these may be in the region of approximately 5.8 billion rand in total. And that concludes my presentation. And I don't know if there are any questions, or
let's take all the presentations. We'll engage.
in terms of my presentation, I think it's important that the committee understand the rules about the clean, in terms of the clean break principle, so that because the law speaks to the clean break principle itself, but the rule gives the detail of how it's going to be implemented within the GPF. Just a brief background for the committee is that when the Section 37D of the Patient Find Act was introduced in 2000, way back in 2007, at that time, this was not made applicable to the GPF. But the GPF board at that time said to itself, okay, how do we look at this clean break principle and start implementing it into the GPF? So as way back as January 2008, they started investigating it and looking into how do we do this. The extensive research was undertaken. They engaged actuaries, they engaged a legal consultant. Given the nature of the GPF that we had defined benefit, we needed to look at the complexities and the nature around and all of the GPF to be able to implement this principle. And also we needed to ascertain, was a rule amendment required only or a law amendment also? And during that time, while all of this was happening in September 2009, we faced the application by Ms. Lisa. And it was a bit unfortunate that the research that we had done was not culminated before we had this application. But I think what is important is the committee notes that the GPF had started their investigations way back in 2008 around this. And Ms. Visa's judgment is there now and resulting in terms of making the period within which we implement this short. However, from the GPF perspective, we had started engaging on this. We even informed Ms. Lisa in terms of how far we've come in the process. Even in our court cases, the process of investigations was detailed. So, therefore, it enabled us as early as mid-June after the judgment, we were able to table this amendment bill because the GPF realized that we needed to have a law amendment to be able to implement the rules. So basically, in terms of the clean break principle in the rule, we needed to make certain definition changes to allow for this rule implementation. I think I just want to highlight two rule definition changes, the one being the actuarial interest, which has to be amended to state that the actuarial interest is an amount representing the value of a member's benefit in the fund based on his or her pensionable service, less the amount, if any, which is required to be reduced in terms of Rule 1410. Rule 1410 is the new rule that we want to put in place that speaks to the clean break principle. And I think the next important definition for the committee to note is the definition of divorce debt. In order for the fund to implement the clean break principle without it having any financial impact, the approach that the board has adopted is the creation of a divorce debt against the member's account in respect of the amount that is paid to the former spouse, together with interest that will be deducted from the member's account on exit to allow that we do not affect his service in any way. So I think that's important. If we go to the rule itself, what we want to propose in the next slide, Esti, a new Rule 1410. And Rule 1410 details the process and time frames for implementation of the clean break. It's similar along the lines of Section 37D, where basically we request that a certified copy of the divorce order must be presented to the fund. I think that the non-member spouse would be asked to provide how he or she would like to receive the money to the fund, whether they want to receive it directly or have it placed into the preservation fund, and this is similar to the Section 37D. And once an election is made by the non-member spouse, the fund will make payment within 60 days. I think it's also important to note that if the member does not make an election, the fund is called upon to pay directly to the non-member spouse. Once the fund receives the divorce order, the fund will record a divorce debt against the member's account in the amount due to the former spouse. In terms of Section 1410.7, what we're proposing is that if the fund cannot reasonably ascertain how payment is to be made to the former spouse, the fund will retain that money plus interest until such time as details regarding the non-member spouse is found. And when the benefit becomes payable to the member, the divorce debt will be deducted either from the member's gratuity, if any, or from the member's annuity. The annuity will be capitalized by the funds actually, and once the divorce debt is deducted, thereafter payment is made to the member. In terms of process thus far on implementation, in terms of the next slide, in terms of the clean break, the rules, I think together once the amendment bill has been gazetted, the rules will have to be gazetted. The rules will have to go to the PSCBT. We have already, way back in November 2010, started engaging the PSCBT on the possible rule amendment, and further engagements are still necessary. I think the issues around tax implications, we'll still have to discuss that with the relevant bodies. And currently we have plus minus 5,000 divorce order cases on our system, which once this is gazetted, will be immediately cleared off the system. I think in terms of the NSF implementation, the rules regarding the NSF have already been gazetted on 8th of July 2011. Engagements have been held with Treasury, SARS, and JAPAR around the process of payment, and especially around the tax implications. Currently, the NSF members that are impacted in respect of this cabinet memo is around 24,500 of GPF members, and our administrator Jafar has already begun the process of payment. I think at this point, since we're not taking any questions, Chairperson, I'll just hand over to Mr. Rian Puri, who's just going to take the committee through how the rules around the NSF are detailed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. As the committee is aware, just been informed, the rules for the implementation of the NSF dispensation at the GEPF have been promulgated, so they are in place. We can advise you in that respect. I would just like to take you through briefly through what the rules will empower us to do. On that first slide, we deal with the fact that Rule 10.6 has been amended, and it's been amended to effectively abolish the requirement that members have to pay for NSF recognition. Previously, they had to pay 5%. In terms of the new dispensation, they no longer have to pay that 5%, and that has been abolished. Previously as well, they also had to pay back any special pension benefits that they received, as well as demobilization benefits. That has also been abolished. There's no longer that need. And then it's also been changed, Rule 10.6, to allow for the full recognition of NSF service. If you remember, previously, if you had less than 10 years NSF service, then only 50% of your NSF service was recognized. That has been abolished, so the full 100% NSF service is recognized. Next slide, Rule 11.9 has been introduced, and the function of Rule 11.9 is just to deal with who is going to pay for the new NSF dispensation. As we know, it's the state, and Rule 11.9 provides that the state will cover the full liability. It also allows for a funding plan, so the fund and the state can enter into an agreement as to how the money will be paid back to the fund to pay for the NSF dispensation. Then we introduce the new Rule 11A and a new Rule 11B. Rule 11A authorizes the repayment of special pension benefits, demobilization benefits, as well as contributions already paid historically by NSF members. So where under the old rule they had to pay these things or amounts back, they now get repaid by the fund, the amounts they paid plus interest. And this will be paid to them, or it accrues to them, legally speaking, after 31 March 2011. Rule 11B deals with the payment of the benefits which now result from the new NSF dispensation. If you are still a member of the GPF, the rule authorizes us to recalculate your years of pensionable service. Then if you've already left the GPF, things are different and more complicated. What we then have to do is to calculate your increased benefits from the date you exited the GPF. until 31 March. So you would have an increased in gratuity and increased annuity. And what we do is we calculate all of that, we roll it up into one lump sum, and we pay it as a gratuity to you after 31 March 2011. Then we also have the rule authorizing us to then effect an increase to your monthly pension, because obviously now your years of pensionable service increase, and after 1 April you will then receive an increased monthly pension to accommodate that. Then just to say again, the arrears accrue after 31 March 2011, and then we do have the possibility that you might actually owe the fund if you're a former NSF member. There is a small category of people who might owe. We've also increased the rule to say that you can pay that back and then and reach an agreement, sorry, with the GEPF on how to pay the money back. And as I said, these rules have been published. They were published on 8 July 2011. And for the special pension dispensation to come into place, we obviously have to promulgate the act that is before you today.
Suggest that we take a 5 minute break, and then when we come back, we can engage with the GPTF. Is that agreed to? Yes. Thank you. 5 minutes, and then.
So just telling me, and it makes sense that I want to have that. send my thank you notes.
They're called outside. Sending an invitation to the
Because that's my book. To make sure that
not sure what we're going to do.
What?
what I want to know, the people that's been in the system, are they already in the system, or will we be able to see new people come forward and say, no, I've been in service for 10 years, and I'm coming out of cover now, and it will be verified. The last thing, if that is the case, that people can come out now, after the 31st of March 2011, who will verify? What system will there be that you or the GPF is happy that that verification is a good one? And so on.
Dr. Cho.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the clean break issue, as you mentioned, that the Pension Fund Act was amended in 2007 to make provision for this, and that's quite a long time. And we did hear an explanation as to why it took that time. But it really was a long lag, and one of the members needed to go, or whoever this person was, needed to go to the Constitutional Court process. So what I'd like to know is, I know that they're separate acts, but how and who makes sure that the Government Employees Pension Fund is pursuing best practice when the Pension Fund Act is amended, so that they don't end up separated? But also, as my colleague Honourable Kornop was alluding to, is this issue about preservation or compulsory preservation, is that if that starts to happen, for example, during the retirement reform process and the Pension Fund Act might get updated, what's going to happen to this act? So I think these are disjoint, and I think somebody isn't watching this thing possibly, so I'd like to know how that works. And then on the issue of the NSF members, I'd like to know how this $5.8 billion was calculated and how will it be funded? Because I would like to comment on the statement that the state pays. It's actually not the state, it's the taxpayers that pay. The state is in deficit, it doesn't actually have any money of its own. So it is the taxpayer, and what I'd like to know is, has the fund put together some kind of a model to indicate how this is going to be funded? Because it's going to have to come from somewhere. Thank you, Chairperson.
I think members have covered my point, but I will just emphasize on key aspects of the point that I'm going to raise. On the clear break principle, or the clean break principle, I just wanted to know, because it was cited that the studies were conducted, and I think all of us are totally, there is, I mean, the evidence to indicate that the introduction of some of these measures might have influence on the behavior of married people, like the one cited by Honorable Korenwolf. I mean, the divorce where the partners agree that is the divorce for, other can term it divorce for convenience, because you can cash into this partner. Because it's very difficult, I mean, for families, I mean, to tap into that while the main member is still around. But also, how broadly, in your studies, have you ever came across a situation where there was an indication of a promotion of divorces as a result of this particular act for this particular practice? Broadly, what in your studies, have you picked up any behavioral effects as a result of this principle? And pardon my naivety, also my little knowledge around marriage, the definition of marriage, because you are confining, I mean, this explanation to customary marriage. But I'm not sure how do you categorize or how do you cater for other marriages. But also in the light of the fact that the last time I checked, I'm not a lawyer, but the last time I checked, gays and lesbian marriage were also accorded in our constitution. So I just wanted to check if the marriage definition caters for all these sort of situations. And yeah, I think obviously I was going to ask on What are the features of this termination of the amount that has been put aside for special pension? I mean, but the Honourable George did cover that. Thank you.
Over to you, Chief.
Chairperson, I'll just noted the questions and I'll just assign in terms of how we're going to answer it. I think the clean break questions, I will address that, and if Leon can address the issue on the NSF in terms of the verification and how do the new members come on board, and if in terms of the funding, Laurel can cover that. Okay, and Janine as well. I mean, also Janine, if you can cover the last question from Honorable Van Rooyen around the definition of marriage and does it include on gay, the gay relationship. In terms of the question that Honorable Kurinov, I hope I pronounced your surname correctly, you spoke about the fact of whether we're giving cash and preservation and around the issue of family debt and what happens there. You see, when the clean break principle was introduced in terms of the Pension Fund Act, it allowed for cash or preservation. So bringing it into the GPF, we have kept the same principle. Yes, there has been evidence that indicated people were using this process to alleviate their debt and maybe divorce or for convenience. However, the fact that it's implemented in terms of the Pension Fund Act does not mean that we should not implement. We as the GPF, we need to, as you said, reduce that gap. And yes, it's going to have to come around education, and I think the fact that government is now speaking towards enforcing preservation, we can prevent people from doing that. We as the GPF recognize that it is a risk. However, we do not believe that we should not still implement something, a principle that is already out there and allows people to, especially on divorce, because if in terms of their divorce, they've agreed in terms of how they're going to split their matrimonial benefits, we need to allow for that implementation. Janine, I don't know whether you want to add on anything on that.
On the aspect of preservation, it is an important issue, and it is a matter that the National Treasury is looking into concern in general in relation to pension fund benefits. But we will be looking at addressing that issue and all of the issues relating to preservation and how it should appropriately be addressed, and we'll seek to address it in a consistent manner, both in relation to all of the funds that are regulated in terms of the Pension Funds Act as well as the GEPF. So those are issues that are being thoroughly investigated. They've started looking into these on a policy basis already, and that is an aspect that was noted in the policy document that was released in February this year. So that is certainly an important issue. But we, with the GEP bill, we didn't feel that we could introduce something that would be again inconsistent with what's in the Pension Funds Act, and then, you know, we could be also subject to challenge in that respect. But it is certainly a very important issue that we will be looking at. And then just in noting the query about the definition of former members of non-statutory forces or services and whether there will be a large number of additional people who nobody was aware of who will be sort of, now coming out of the woodwork and claiming. It is relevant to note that we're not changing the definition of a former member of non-statutory force or service. That definition that's currently in the Act and the criteria for how those people, how they were determined as being members of a non-statutory force or service, that approach has been consistently applied, and it will, and the same criteria will continue to be applied to anybody who may be making a new application because for one reason or another previously they might not have been eligible to continue to receive certain benefits or to have all of the full length of their service recognized. But the criteria for determining are clearly set out in the definition itself. Thank you.
The administration, if you want to add to that, because we have members on the system, GPF system, that we recognize as NSF members, but we will have to verify that process. And I think SD, the board has made some
some decisions around that.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Indeed, the possible NSF beneficiaries and members of the non-statutory forces are known at this point in time. In terms of the previous dispensation, and like Janine indicated, the definition has not changed. And in terms of the requirement of that definition, those members had to have entered into employment contracts prior to 31 March 2002, and then in respect of NIA and SES, the Secret Service, they had an opportunity to enter into employment contract up until 31 March 2004. So if you had not been integrated by that point in time, you cannot now come in 2011 and join and now become an NSF member. With regards to who verifies, the political parties, specifically MK, in continuity, and specifically DOD, where the largest number of these members are stationed, have got personnel registers and historical records confirming their non-statutory service for the periods they are wishing to receive recognition for non-statutory force service, and based on that service certificate that is required from the various political parties. On such a basis, the non-statutory force service is recognized.
Ms. Natasha, do you want to add anything on special pension? Please do.
Morning again. I will just clarify the financial implications. The current estimates that we've arrived at for NSF is 4.7 billion. And then for special pensions, it's 18 million. And the payment arrangement will be as follows. Since GPS has agreed to advance the funds to GPAA to make the payments to the different members of NSF and special pensions, National Treasury will, from the fiscal, refund the GPS. And we are working on a funding model. Could be between a year and 5 years to repay the GPS, but so far I want to state that the cost is only an estimate.
Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, I think there was one question from Honourable George in terms of how are we keeping up to best practice and not ensuring that this divide happens. I think at the GPF we are consistently looking at what's happening within the private sector already in terms of the preservation issues, in terms of what Treasury or government wants to go around that. We've started undertaking the research, and I'm comfortable that the GPF is continuously keeping itself on the pulse in terms of what's happening within the private sector and trying to see how within itself it can implement what it needs to. And that is due to the fact that the board has always said that we should always be looking out to what's happening around in the private sector and best practice and make sure that we bring it into the GPF. I think there was the other question from Honourable Van Rooyen around the issue. I think I've covered you around the issue of whether there will be these divorces of convenience. I mean, we do recognize that there is a risk, but however, we do not believe that the risk is so high that we should not implement what already is in the private sector. But there is a duty on us to educate and to communicate to members the reasons for the implementation of the clean break principle. Around the definition of divorce, Janine, I think, when that divorce, the definition of marriage and whether it extends around gay, you can just cover that.
Marriages that will be impacted upon by this amendment.
Thank you very much. Now, in drafting the bill and the implementation of the clean break principle, we had to look at how it's currently incorporated in the Pension Funds Act, and also look at how, because the basis on which the clean break principle is implemented is based upon court orders that are issued in terms of the Divorce Act, we had to align it with the Divorce Act also. Now, the Divorce Act, for the definitions that are applicable in terms of the Divorce Act, in relation to what constitutes a marriage, then become incorporated into how things are implemented in terms of the GEP law. Now, it is possible, unfortunately I don't have the Divorce Act with me right now, but you know, it may be possible that, you know, the Divorce Act also may need to be, you know, looked at in terms of how it defines and incorporates all of these different types of unions that now exist. But right now we had to align ourselves with what the current practice is, you know, with the Divorce Act itself and also with the Pension Funds Act and how things are being implemented in relation to the other pension funds to try to ensure that we're handling things consistently with how they're handled in relation to those other funds.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, firstly, I would like to propose that the National Treasury, they take back the concept of the preservation, because it's a very critical one. Why I'm saying it's critical? It's critical in the sense that we have done it, I don't know whether it was 209 or 210, where we look at the taxation amendment bill, you know, this lump sum withdrawal. So we cannot be seen being one department and one committee being inconsistent when you do the amendments to our bill. It's going to create a problem. So I would suggest that, because I really do have a problem where a cash is being withdrawn when the cash was designed for a pension, just because there are circumstances that are leading to the withdrawal of this cash. That is a problem. When you look at the other the amendments that we have done as far as the taxation is concerned, they contradict what we are doing. So I suggest, Chair, that the Treasury, they actually take this back and maybe come back to us in whatever form. Now, thank you, Chair. I would like to do the contribution on point two, object of the bill. Why then do we decide to amend this bill? If you look on top, the first one is to look at the new definition and amendment and the insertion thereof. Now, I was going to appreciate if the definitions, if at least when the presentation was prepared, we were taken step by step. We're saying the principal act was saying this, and this is the new amendment. This is what we have inserted, or this is how we have changed from this old one to the new one. Taking for an example, in definition employer, I am not aware you are forming from which premise to arrive at this definition, and that is creating a bit of a problem. And the second definition, in fact, is the insertion of a pension interest. Now, if you look at that insertion, it says somewhere, if the membership of the fund would have been terminated. Now, it creates a bit of a problem to me. Are we saying advocate gotten off a divorce, and by divorcing, automatically he has resigned from the fund? Are we saying that? Somebody says, somebody says yes. But now, if the case is he is still there, he will be owing something within the fund. That's why we've got a divorce debt. So before you answer, so what I'm saying, they would, if you look at that definition, just check it. And I'm not too sure, Chair. The second one, Chair, it's 2.3. We say to amend the powers of the board rules, to make rules. It makes it so general and so broad that it's not just rules. So I would propose that if they say, can you protect me, Chair? I'm just proposing, if possible, instead of just leaving it so broad and open, then they say to amend the powers of the board to make the rules on the implementation of the clean break principle, because that's exactly what those rules will be made for, not just to amend any other rules, but you say at the end of the day, just after the rules, on the implementation of the clean break principle, then I think then it will be very specific.
eligible.
My question is on the definition of a nanny member, spouse member. Do you, in the event of default, the other dependent, how do you cater for them, like the minor, the dissipate? Because the divorce act normally stipulates what needs to be done about those. But here, looking at this act now, on your amendment, it only concentrates on the two parties, either the two main parties, which the non-member spouse of the member. I just want some clarification, whether do you consider those recommendations from court or not.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the answers to my questions, but there is one thing that I just want to press on. This issue about 5.8 billion rand, I appreciate that you're saying it's an estimate, and then we go on to say in the region of 5.8 billion. Now, I think we need to see two things. What I'd like to see, how this estimate was actually calculated. I'd like to see the calculation myself. And I think we need to tighten that up, because I think this committee would be a little bit sloppy to say, well, fine, let's pass a law, and we think it's about 5 billion, but maybe it's 10. You know, I don't think that we can do that. So I think we do need to have a sharper pencil on this. Thanks, Jacobs.
I think Honorable Maslamini raised a number of points and things that we need to take note of. The issue that you're saying in terms of the cash withdrawal, I just wanted to understand, because what we try to do is bring into the GPF what is currently within the Pension Fund Act. And now, if we were to say implement this and say only preservation, because that's where we're going in terms of preservation, and I think that's what Treasury was saying earlier, that we did not want to address what is currently being researched in terms of where we want to go on preservation in this amendment. But also, we don't want to find ourselves not having this amendment, because we need to bring consistency in terms of how we're treating members. So that, for me, is a bit of a problem in terms of how we're going to do that. Because I think what we were thinking is that we'll address it in the wider preservation issues, but I'm not sure, SP, is there something that you wanted to add?
Thank you, Honourable Chair and members, and I'll also include the response to Honourable Mutitra's question. I think we all appreciate the seriousness of preservation, but we must remember that in terms of the clean break and what we're dealing with here, and the entitlement to a non-member spouse to a part of the pension interest is actually part of a division of a joint estate in terms of the marriage. So it's not the non-member's pension portion. It's not the non-member's provision for her pension necessarily. That's why she has the option, depending on her personal financial circumstances, whether to take the cash out immediately, as opposed to the current dispensation, where that non-member spouse who might have to look after small children when at the time of divorce at this point, having to wait till ex-spouse exits the fund within 10, 15, 20 years from now, with no growth on her portion that was awarded to her in terms of a divorce order as part of a division of joint estates of matrimonial benefits, giving her the opportunity to get that portion of the division of the matrimonial benefits at this point in time. And that is the benefit to the non-member spouse. Coupled to that benefit, she then has the opportunity to preserve that amount if her personal circumstances allow for such. But the preservation around her portion, we must differentiate that this is an award given by the court in terms of the divorce order of patrimonial benefits to which she's entitled a certain portion
based on the division of a joint estate in inverted commas in terms of the marriage. So therefore, it's not necessarily her provision for pension benefits. So it very much depends on people's specific financial circumstances as to whether she can, the non-member spouse, he or she, whether the non-member spouse can afford to preserve at this point in time, or whether she needs it, given that she's now a divorcee, to maintain her lifestyle, her children, etc., going forward. Then coupled to that, a question around what about other beneficiaries. Again, we must remember why this specifically deals with non-member spouses is because we're dealing with a divorce situation. So we're dealing with a deduction that is allowed in terms of the Divorce Act, in terms of this divorce, which awards a non-member spouse a specific part of a benefit that is part of the bigger benefit or the bigger estate in terms of the marriage. Other beneficiaries are taken into account when we pay out pension benefits to members, being it on the death of a member or on the death of a pensioner. There, your other beneficiaries come into play because then we're dealing with a pension benefit and that payment. This benefit is very specific in terms of when there's a divorce and when there's an award made to a non-member spouse for the divorce. We obviously do, in terms of those divorce orders and whatever is stated in those divorce orders, do take into account if the situation arises closely after there's such a divorce order and those facts are still relevant at that point in time, if there was, for instance, maintenance allowed in terms of the divorce order for other beneficiaries. And if, for instance, they will now, the member maybe passes away shortly afterwards, we do take into account those provisions in the divorce order to see what other beneficiaries might have been dependent on one of the parties, specifically the member of the GPF, to establish and to review which other beneficiaries should be part and should at least be considered in dividing the pension benefits. But we're dealing with two different benefits. Yeah, the one is the pension benefit in this clean break, and the payment to a non-member spouse is very specifically the divorce order, which is not necessarily, like I say, for a non-member spouse, the provision of her pension.
Okay, can I just do a follow-up here? Because I do understand what you're saying, but all what I'm saying, if you have listened to our minister this morning, where he was indicating that the treasury is to to ensure that the cash withdrawal, you know, from the Provident Fund and the pension, he is to stop that. Now, I do understand that this divorcee is entitled, according to the order of the court, to get that. But where the problem is, which I'm saying the National Treasury needs to do some homework there, is the handling thereof of this money after it has been given to him or her. That entitlement, after it has been allocated, because does this mean I can go to her savings or his savings and do anything? That is the part that I am saying the National Treasury needs to look at it, because it's still the lump sum of money that has been taken out. And the follow-up thereof, the law doesn't say anything, it's quiet. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that's noted, and it will be taken into consideration.
I think the other part of the question was around the pension interest. And I think Janine in her presentation did give you the definition, but it's a new insertion of it's a new definition and aligned in terms of what is stated in the Divorce Act. But what we try to do, because you understand the GPF doesn't have a minimum benefit concept as you have in the private sector. So in terms of what we try to do in the approach is we need to determine what would the member's benefit be at the time of the divorce order so that we can make a proper apportion. So I think in terms of the research undertaken and the best option decided on, it is to determine that the date of the divorce, we consider it as the date the member would exist the fund. So it's not actually we're going to resign him from the fund, but we say take that date as if he or she would resign, so that we can then determine an actuarial amount
on that date then to determine an apportionment. So I think if I'm explaining that better in terms of what we try to do on the approach within the GEPF around the same day implementation, because of the fact that we don't have minimum benefits like you have in the private sector. Does anyone else like to add if I'm not answering carefully? Yeah?
So it's just a fiction. It's a as if situation that the definition foresees, merely in order to be able to calculate the value of the pension interest at the point in time of divorce. Because, well, obviously the member would not necessarily have exited the fund at the point of divorce, but remember this is a defined benefit fund. So all the benefits are calculated in terms of formulas set out in the law and in the rules, and they are based on at the point in time when you exit the fund, plus your years of service, plus your salary, etc., all the factors within the formula. So when a divorce happens at a point in time prior to a member exiting the fund, we need a method to calculate the value of that pension interest, which is capable of being divided between the member and the non-member at that point in time of the divorce order. So all the definition tries to do is to create a fictional situation to say that if on the date of divorce the member would have resigned, that is the formula you apply to get to the value of what the pension interest on that date is, and then dependent on the divorce order, whatever percentage the non-member spouse has been awarded is the percentage of that value on that day, as if he would have resigned.
Okay. Just to give clarity on the finances, since this new dispensation was allows for three different payments. For example, on special pensions, how we arrived at the 80 million was that if now we have to reactivate the special pensions together with recognizing your NSF service, so we will go back to the database and check how much did you qualify for before we stopped it. If it was 1,000 a month, then we reactivated and we check in the entire database how many people were stopped their special pension when their NSF service was recognized and reactivate those payments. That's how we arrived at the 80 million. But we are still verifying that figure on the bigger amount of 4.7 billion. Even though Treasury will repay GPF, since this is employer contribution and your own contribution of a pension, we'll go back to the department. Since we have access to each department budget in the baseline, the E&E, we'll go back to their budget baseline, and recoup the amount back to National Treasury. It was an easy arrangement that way, instead of GPF going after each department to claim back the pension contribution. So it's easier for Treasury to do it centrally. We'll repay upfront and then go back to the department baselines and recoup the amount. And how we arrived at that figure is based on, for example, the list of NSF members that we're going to pay. The biggest portion comes from defense. They have the most NSF members, right? So the GPF will calculate the actuarial calculation and using a standard formula to say this person will qualify for how much and their refund will be how much. So that multiplied by the number of people in that department gives us around 3 billion for defense. They're the biggest members of NSF. And then the rest of the other departments is small numbers, all coming up together to around 1 point something billion. So even that is still at an estimation stage. We are verifying the methodology ourselves because GPF used their actuaries. So we are verifying the methodology and the numbers in our public finance department. And once that's confirmed, then we'll submit the final figures.
Concerns that were raised by the members of the
financial implications of this amendment. I think it's a critical issue that we all need information or clarity on. The estimations at least must come closer to the real value. There are members of special pensions that their pensions have not been processed yet. Applications are still lying at Mr. Treasurer. I'm not sure whether they are part of these calculations or not. Hence, I'm saying as we move on with the processes of this legislation, we need to be clarified on those issues so that we do not get surprises at the end of the day. The second issue that members are raising is the issue around educational savings. I know National Treasury is planning a strategy around that, but I think we need to get a strategy from the GPS as to how are we going to educate our members out there on matters relating to savings. Because any legislation that we pass here or develop is open to abuse, but we must put systems in place at least to try and so as we move on, I think we'll keep on engaging with GPS until we finalize the legislation. But those issues, when you come back to Parliament, I think we need to respond to on those matters in particular. Honorable members, thank you very much for your time. GPS, thank you very much.